clinking off the blocks of glass off the rim of the cargo box and slapping into flesh and bone.
Oh, shit!
Wincing, Mildred looked at the plastisteel missile embedded in her forearm. She used its fringe of black synthetic feather to take it out and throw it away. The other slaves who could did likewise, either yanking out the flechettes themselves, or if they had been hit in an awkward spot, allowing someone else to remove them. Those already grievously wounded, comatose or dead, just lay there like human pincushions. As the rear wags continued to pound Jack and Dean's position, a loud hailer from one of the lead wags bellowed at them.
Surrender now! Throw out your weapons, or you'll get another dose of darts! And there'll be full power next time!
Eat shit, motherfucker! Shit!
Another of the slow-flying warheads came arcing their way. Doc used his pulse rifle to pick it off like a clay pigeon. As it crossed the path of the emerald green beam, the warhead exploded, sending its deadly flechettes spraying in all directions but theirs.
Way to go, you crazy old coot!
Why, thank you, madam.
When the assault wag tried the same trick a third time, the warhead had seven green beams to contend with.
Wait! Look! The wags in the back!
Troopers in black were piling out of the rear doors of both of the wags, clearly heading around the upper end of the crevasse to intercept Jack, Dean, and the others.
Shoot them!
She sighted down on the running men. The concentrated fire of seven laser rifles did no good. Their initial shots veered off the EM shields of their targets' battle suits. The troopers were moving too fast to aim for their feet. Then the forward wags fired their cannons again. At the energy flare, the ore wag lurched backward violently, throwing Mildred and Doc under their butts on top of the heap of glass blocks. The wag continued to slide this time, and as it did, it twisted sickeningly, turning the unprotected side of the cargo box toward the pair of cannons. Cannon fire from the other side of the chasm drove Jack and Dean from the ridgetop. The mutie albino joined up with the four surviving slaves on the backside.
Another 100 yards, then we cut away the road.
With Jack in the lead, they ran along the side of the slope, harassing fire from the cannons, sending chunks of the ridge avalanching around them. The distance as the buzzard flew was closer to 60 yards, but the ridgeline didn't run straight. It wound back and forth in a serpentine of glassy talus, gaping splits, and sheer drop-offs. Because of the twists and turns, because they were out of sight of the road, they didn't see the troopers coming at them until it was too late. Jack reacted to a glimpse of black moving among the green-gray blocks of glass on the slope ahead. He jumped aside, taking Dean with him. A flurry of laser beams sliced through the space where the two had just been. They sliced through the man following behind. He toppled, suddenly in five large pieces, arms, legs, and head, bouncing in different trajectories down the side of the ridge. The slaves in back of the dead guy dove away and were missed by the through-and-throughs.
Aim for ridge above them! Drive them back!
It was a stalling action at best. They sent energy pulses hammering into the ridge, which melted the glass, and sent it rushing downhill in a torrent. The troopers were unable to fire back because they were too busy retreating from the glass flow. They moved up the side of the slope, trying to get as high as possible to keep the same thing from happening again. They scurried up until their backs were against the brittle fin of eroded glass. The increased altitude exposed the troopers to the slaves' fire, but they were relying on their battlesuits' EM shields to protect them. The higher elevation gave them much better positions to shoot from, and they put them to use immediately. Beams bracketed the slave who was farthest down the slope. They melted the glass around him as they sawed through his body. The first slash bisected his torso from right shoulder to left hip. The others chopped him into much smaller pieces. His remains sizzled and smoked, along with the bubbling puddle of glass.
Over the top! Everybody goes! Mass your fire! Drop the road! I'm coming!
Dean scrambled up the slope along with the others. Every step they took reduced the angle of advantage the troopers had. Behind him, Dean heard the squeal of Jack's laser rifle returning fire. There was no time to look. He picked his way over the glass rubble near the summit, found a gap in the ridge's fan, and threw himself belly down. Before him, the road stretched out straight. The forward wags were punishing the ore truck, driving it backward toward the abyss with double pulse after double pulse. He could see the people in the cargo box. They fell each time the EM shield was hit. As he shouldered the laser rifle and dropped the safety, the ore wag was hit again, and the impact turned it sideways in the road, offering its unprotected flank to direct fire. Dean pressed the trigger, holding it down as he fanned the point of the green beam over the fattest part of the road-supporting glass. The other slaves opened fire at almost the same instant. Their combined beams melted back the layers of glass, in seconds creating a roaring waterfall more than 100 feet wide. The entire section of road shifted. Its facing edge dropped down a foot. Then another, as Dean and the slaves burned back the top of the undercut ledge.
Holy shit, it's going!
The road suddenly gave way. In slow motion, the four black wags slipped downward, along with 100 feet of road and 10,000 tons of new glass rubble. The wags tumbled, crashing against the sides of the chasm. Dean looked over at the only vehicle remaining on the road, their ore wag. People were standing in the cargo box, waving their arms excitedly. What they couldn't see or hadn't noticed was how close they were to the edge of the cave-in. As he opened his mouth to yell a warning, the road under the uphill side of the wag began to slough off, tipping the box toward the abyss. As the box tilted over, it spilled bodies and ore down into the crevasse. Then, it slid off the edge of the road.
Jack!
The albino wasn't there. He was hurriedly mopping up the troopers near the ridge. Having dropped big sections of the fan of glass on top of them, he walked among their trapped bodies, removing helmets one by one, and cooking their brains with short single pulses of his energy weapon. At Dean's shout, he looked over from his grim duty.
Mildred! Doc! What about Mildred and Doc?
Mildred and Doc had watched with delight as the road gave way and the attack wags dropped from view. They were celebrating along with the other slaves as the cargo box began to tip.
Jump!
No one heard her. As she jumped to the rim of the box, Doc launched himself ahead of her, stretching to the utmost, his skinny legs churning to reach the lip of solid ground that remained downslope. Mildred landed half on, half off the ledge. Doc turned.
My goodness, dear Mildred, I thought you were stronger than that.
Fuck you, Doc.
Please give me your arm, Miss Manners.
He pulled her up. Their toes inches from the edge, they looked down into the chasm. Clouds of dust rose up as the ground rumbled underfoot. Like sand through an hourglass, big chunks of glass slipped through the dark slot below them. Bodies slipped through them too, limp bodies cartwheeling into the void. The wags themselves were too big to fall through. They lay wedged between the edges of the second crevasse. The ore wag was upside down. Three of its wheels had been broken off by the fall. Everyone in the cargo box was gone. As Mildred and Doc watched, a side door to one of the assault wags opened, and three tiny human figures crawled out. Some of the troopers had survived, but there was nowhere safe for them to stand outside their crumpled wag. Their weight caused the precariously balanced jumble of blocks to move, and when the blocks shifted, they opened new routes to the yawning emptiness below. The three troopers and a wide section of rubble suddenly vanished. If more of the enemy were alive, they didn't show themselves.
You're alive!
Is that Jack?
Jack's white mane of hair was unmistakable. He waved them around the lower end of the crevasse, then pointed to the upper end.
It appears that we are to rejoin the road above the slide.
We'd better get a move on. We've got a long, hot walk ahead of us.
Dreda herself supervised the towing of the last two gyroplanes into position inside the pink-flagged transport field. Between the twin 50-foot-long trailers that housed the trans-reality units was an ellipse of vital gear, most of it self-propelled or at least mobile. When the gyros were parked in their assigned places, she gestured impatiently for the wag drivers to exit their vehicles. The drivers were men, and they weren't coming along.
Start up the reality field generators!
First thing!
When the switches were pulled, the air just in front of and between them seemed to shimmer and blur. That's when the trouble started. The trooper stood anxiously outside the perimeter of pink flags. The female officer stood inside it, resolute, with gauntleted hands on their genetically engineered hips. Until that moment, it hadn't occurred to the troopers that they weren't invited to the next party. As Dreda locked down her helmet, Miro burst from the doorway of the big dome. She had her battle suit on and carried her helmet under her arm. Miro rushed up.
Oh, Shadow Man's here. He freed the red-haired bitch.
They're loose of the compound.
Put on your helmet, Miro. There's no time for those nuisances. We're about to make the jump.
What about us? You're not leaving us here. We'll all die from the bacteria.
Got a Keter.